Good evening. My name is Keith, and I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is a Wednesday night big book study group. My sobriety date is July 15, 2003. And I don't say that to brag. I say that to let the newcomer know that it is possible to stay sober one day at a time with a little bit of work done. So tonight we're supposed to be talking about 6 and 7. I don't know where we'll eventually get there, but for the past couple of weeks, or for the last 5 weeks, we've been talking about the problem a lot. You know, I've been breaking that down because when I first came in, the guys that I was with wanted me to understand what I was up against, so they made sure I understood step one. So if you've been here a lot and you've heard me, it seems like, talk about this over and over and over and over, I apologize, but not really, because newcomers don't really know. So I'm speaking to the newcomer because I feel like they are the most important person in the room, and so for the last 5 weeks, we've been talking about this thing, and again, I came in 2003, not knowing what an alcoholic was, thinking I knew what an alcoholic was, thinking I knew how to manage my life, and so in step one, I know what the problem is. You know, if you're in this room, you pretty much know what the problem is, too. You have an analogy of the body that says that when I drink, I can't stop, and I have my own evidence to that. I've been talking about it for the last 5 weeks. You don't have to go to a speaker meeting to hear your truth. You don't have to answer 144 questions. If that lives for you, marry it to your past. When you went out and drunk and did whatever it is you did, could you stop? If you couldn't, that's the first piece of the puzzle. But I also have this obsession of the mind that tells me I don't have the thing. When I got here, I would do things and party like I didn't have this problem when I got the evidence staring me right in the face. So that was step one, you know. And talked about step two, coming to believe in this God thing. And again, if you're new, don't let the word God scare you out, you know, because it's not telling you have to believe right now. All you have to do is be open-minded and be willing to believe. You know, it's not saying you have to believe. But given how I was living when I got here, I just wanted a different life. So I was buying in that the guys who taught me knew what they were talking about. And I didn't want to live like I was living. So let me get to step three. And today, almost 11 years later, step three is like very vital on my sobriety. It's like the most important part of my sobriety today. Because every morning I got to make that decision to turn my will, which is my thoughts and my life, which is my actions, over to a care of God's. I understood them. It's the longer I'm sober, the harder that gets, because I have a mind that tells me, you know, I'm 11 years sober, so I got this thing. You know, and that thought can creep back in, and I can take over and say, okay, I'm 11 years removed from a drink, and so I don't have to work as hard. So God, I got it. I'll take over again, and I'll take over this thing. And so that is important that I do step three every day. But in the beginning, when I got here, I wasn't buying into that. Again, I wasn't with the God thing, and I wasn't turning my will over to something I couldn't see, touch, feel, or see. Like, I didn't know about the God thing, so I wasn't turning it over to that. Again, I turned it over to the guys that I entrusted with my life at that time, you know. I trusted that they knew what they were talking about. I saw how they were living. I saw how they were showing up. I heard their story. When they sat down with me and told me their truth, and they drank like I drank, and they did stuff like I did, and I look at them. So I could buy into what they were saying. So we get into this four-step inventory, and again, this is the first action step, really, for me, as I was taught, and I did this four-step inventory, and it's not the boogeyman, like I said last week. It's not the worst thing ever. You know, you hear people get to step three and then they stop. Like, they're listening to other people who've never done a four-step inventory. They're just, for whatever reason, like, that's where the freedom begins, by doing that four-step inventory. And so I did my four-step inventory, and, you know, I got to see who you got when I showed up on the scene. That's all a four-step inventory is. It's a blueprint of who Keith Neal was for 35 years until I got here. And I did that. And I saw that picture of who you got, and of course my life was screwed up, given who I was when I got here. Again, I was 35 years old, irresponsible. Like, tonight we're going to talk about character defects. And I didn't know what a defect was when I got here. And the book breaks it down beautifully with the seven deadly sins, the PAGs, basically, so that's easy for us to understand. And I had all those things. You know, pride is the first one. You know, I had a lot of pride when I got here. Ego was massive. Lust, gluttony, greed. I had all those things. Anger. And that was running me when I got here. So in the four-step inventory, I see all that. And then couple that with my instincts. And so I lash out at people, like everybody who I came in contact with, all that they were getting that person. And they were coming back at me with their stuff, you know what I mean? So it's a war and conflict going on with us. But I like to mask mine with drinking and drugging. And I did that. And so for 35 years, man, my life was a must. I had geographical cures. I went to Georgia. I mean, I went to the Marines. I did everything except look at myself. Like, for the first 35 years of my life, I looked out outside. It was everybody else's fault why my life sucked. Excuse my French. But that was my truth, you know what I mean? I didn't know any better. The book talks about my alcoholic life being my only normal life. And to me, that was normal. You know, I did what every 20-year-old did and an 18-year-old, we partied. You know, in the beginning, it was fun. I ain't gonna sit here and say I didn't have fun out there drinking and drugging and partying, because I did. But at some point, it stopped being fun, and I started getting consequences. And so I did that four-step inventory, and I got to see who you saw, but nothing's changed. I'm still the same person. I talked about it last week. I'm still the same person. And this whole deal, this whole recovery thing is all about change. Like, it's all about being somebody different. I've heard people say, I want my old life back when they come into recovery or AA or treatment. I just want my life back. Why? You know what I mean? Given who I was when I got here, why would I want that crap back? So no, this book affords us, this step process affords us for old self to die. And at my home group, we have this thing we put up every week. And we put up every week because it's a beautiful question to ask yourselves, even if you're 1 year, 10 years, 30 years sober. I'm ready to give up who I've been to become who I can be. But when I got here, that statement hit me hard. Like, man, what is he saying in that? How can I give up that? How do I do that? Because, you know, for years I tried on my own. I changed my behaviors for a minute, but I go back to old self. You know what I mean? But this program affords me an opportunity to do that. And it's all about my commitment level. We'll talk about that in a little bit later. So I did my four-step inventory and, you know, it wasn't that bad or whatever. And I didn't understand the full implications of it until I did my fifth step. Because in the fifth step, this guy I sat down with, I chose my sponsor because I saw what he had and I wanted what he had. And I needed somebody to hold me accountable. And I did my fifth step inventory with this guy. In the presence of God, I told him everything. And he held me accountable. I talked about it last week, you know. And the guy, he didn't sell out on me. When I came at him with the yeah buts and the you don't understands and the, well, this is why, he wasn't having it. Because that served nobody. And he knew that. And I was done with the fifth step inventory. And I didn't have a lot of experience. I didn't have like one of those aha moments. It wasn't like whatever. The best thing I could say about that fifth step inventory was for the first time in 35 years, I had a peaceful sleep that night. You know, I went home that night. I sat for an hour like the book tells me, and I just looked back over the first five proposals. Have I skimped on anything? Have I told this man everything? Have I done it to the best of my ability? And the answer was yes. And I read it last week, you know. We hear the promises read at every meeting, and there's promises thrown throughout this whole book, but the fifth step promises are huge if you're new. Because think back to your last 24 hours out there in the muckety-muck. Think back to your last 48 hours. Where were you? What were you doing? I know exactly where I was. I was in a hotel room in Pompano Beach on Northwest 31st in Hammondville. Nice neighborhood. It was called the Days Inn back then, you know. It was basically a crack den, you know, and that's where I was. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And I know how I felt, like I wanted to commit suicide, but I couldn't do it. I was hopeless, you know, I was useless. Like here I am at 35, I'm playing my life back over my head. My mom, I just seen her for the first time in 7 years. A week prior, I had told her those sweet promises, I'll never do it again, I'm done, I swear, and I meant that, you know what I mean? I meant that when she was here. But here I am in a hotel room with nothing. She sent me $300 to get that room, and this is my life at 35, right? I'm a loser, scumbag, and I see that in a fifth step, you know? But, so after I do this fifth step, this is what happens, and this is what the book promises. But mind you, I haven't done anything yet as far as changing that. It says, we pocket our pride and we go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step with holding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone in perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will come strongly. Imagine that, in the fifth step, this is happening. We feel that we are on a broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. You know, and for the most part, that happened. Like, I hadn't had a drink or thought about a drink up until that point. And that came true. So it told me next, it says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Now, mind you, a couple chapters before that, I didn't want nothing to do with God. But here I am, the promises are coming true, so up to this point. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reviewing the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything from our building of an arch to which we will walk a free man or woman at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skipped on the cement, put it in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Now here's 6 and 7. Now back when they wrote this book in 39, 6 and 7 in the book is only 2 short paragraphs, you know. But 16 years later, Bill thought and he saw what was happening, what was transpiring in those 16 years. And he wrote the 12 and 12, a little bit more meat and depth into it. But in the big book at that time, this is what he wrote. Because again, they didn't have this book and they didn't have AA and they didn't have sponsors. If we can answer our satisfaction, then we look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being an indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove all the things from us which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. Now just marry that to the obsession to drink, right? Up until this point, I haven't had the obsession to drink alcohol. And that was God did that. I could not do that. There's no human power that could do that. So of course he could do that with these defects of character. 6 and 7 go hand in hand. You know what I mean? And then it says here in step 7, when ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I'm not willing that you have all of me, good and bad. I pray now that you remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. So what step 6 and 7 is telling me is that in step 6, I'm asking God to get rid of that person I've become, that man I was when I walked through the door. In step 7, I'm asking him to create the man I want to become. Right? So a lot of people read that, those 2 steps, and think they're done. But to me, and I was taught this, that these 2 steps right here, just in my opinion, are the most important as far as going on with the rest of the work. Because it's teeing me up for steps 8 and 9. You know, it's teeing me up to when I go make my amends, that it's very important that my people that I go to make these amends to and whoever I'm going to see, they get somebody totally different. And the only way that happens is in 6 and 7, preparation. So I say, who was I when I got here? Like, what was living in me? And what are these character defects? Well, the sum total of who I was dishonest, a liar, a cheat, irresponsible. The list goes on and on and on and on, right? And I brought some props to show you, because last week I talked about I can't mix something old with something new and get something new. Because this is all about being something new. This is all about being reborn. And the way that looks is when you hear it, when I say it, you know, it might not make sense to you. But as I go through this thing, I'm going to show you in a second what that looks like. So when I do this step, you know, it's all about preparation. Again, I had great teachers. Because this whole process is about preparation. It's about repetition. It's about incorporating new attitudes, ideas, and beliefs. And casting aside the old ones. That's what 6 and 7 basically is asking. So in 6 and 7, you know. So this is me when I get here, right? Before I do my 4-step inventory. This is all the stuff that's inside. Like I'm a walking, talking, living, breathing garbage can. A walking, talking, breathing thing, a cesspool. I talked about that last week. Everything that was inside of me was just dirty, dark, and murky. That's what this represents right here, right? Got all my character defects in there. The sum total, this is Keith when he walks through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wonder why my life is in the toilet, right? So I come into AA and I stop drinking. And you know, you hear people say, you know, all you gotta do is just don't drink. Just don't drink. Again, we're selling people short when we say that to them, because it's much more than just not drinking. You know what I mean? Like after page 45, the book doesn't even talk about drinking anymore. We're getting down to causes and conditions. Who did you get when I showed up on the scene? Well, this is who you got. This is who you got, right? So I come into AA. I come in after my self-imposed crisis or whatever, after my third DUI, whatever the case may be. You come into Alcoholics Anonymous and treatment, and people say, welcome. We're glad you're here, right? And when I get here, man, my cry is, I'll do anything. Man, tea, cookie, I'll do anything. Please, just show me a way out of this thing. Because I don't want to be this anymore. You know what I mean? Right? And you tell me, well, Keith, we have a program. We're hooking up with a guy that's armed with the facts about himself in this program. What are the facts? Well, we just talked about the facts for the last 5 weeks. It's all in here. You don't have to figure nothing out. If your sponsor doesn't have you in this book, you know, I was taught I can't transmit something I don't have. So if your sponsor doesn't have you in this book, he might not know the book. But this is where the solution is. So I come in here and you tell me about this thing, this program, how I can have a life unimagined. It doesn't promise me a brand new car, a brand new house. It doesn't promise you a brand new job. It doesn't even promise you a girlfriend. You just promise me that I'll get this thing, this we call this relationship with God. Ew, I don't want that. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? But I'm going to come to find out later that he's going to become the most important part of my life. But until then, I'm liking what you're saying. Like, I want to be able to lay my head down at night. I want to be able to hold my head up and look people in the eye. I want to be able to be a man of my word. You know, I want to be dependable, reliable. I don't want my mother and father to wonder where I am. You know what I mean? I'm tired of going to jail eating peanut butter sandwiches at 3 a.m. And I don't want none of that. So you tell me that this is possible, right? That if I do these things, this is possible. Now, let's not get it twisted. Just because I come into recovery, I'm already white as snow. 12 and 12 talks about that. So we talked about the first 5 steps, and here it is right here, step 6. Now, the steps, character defects, right? Those are the things that are objectionable, and that's who I am when I get here. And I said it last week, and I'll say it again. In the foreword of the 12 of 12, it says this, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, which are the opposite of character defects, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced, there's that word practice, like I don't just do the steps and then move on or graduate. I got to incorporate these things in my being. Which if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. Now, that was not me when I got here. So then it says this. This is the step that separates the men from the boys and the girls from the ladies. So declared a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on all his faults without any reservations whatever has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. I never would have said that when I got here. I'm trying to grow in the image and likeness of my creator. Now, back to what I was talking about here. So it says here on page 65 of the 12 and 12. It says, if we ask, God will certainly forgive our derelictions or our defects of character. But in no case does he render me white as snow and keep us that way without my cooperation. That is something we are supposed to be willing to work towards ourselves. He asks only that we try as best we know how to make progress in the building of character. So this whole thing right there is telling me about building of character. Now again, when I got here, this is key, right? And people who love me tell me that this is possible when I get here. So I say, I'm in. I'll do whatever you want or whatever you tell me to do because I'm desperate. I'm dying. And I mean that when I come in here. But I said it last week. 30 days in, 60 days in, I start picking and choosing my way through this thing. I start reverting back to old self. I start not wanting to do the things I'm supposed to do. So this is who I say I want to become, right? I do the steps. I get to 6 and 7. And hell, I know guys that have done this deal that are like, they were 6 years sober. Good friend of mine was 6 years sober doing a deal. I sponsored him. He was sponsoring guys. He was doing it. Had a criminal past, had been to prison before. So he got sober, had a God of his understanding, had a spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. 6 years in, so then he started reverting back to old self. He started picking and choosing. He started going back to the old ways of being. So this is him, right? And this is me. Even today, this is me. You know, this could be me. I'm sober, but a dear friend of mine told me, old self will drink again. Like, old Keith, if I show up, I'm going to drink and drug again. That's just how it is. So this is me. So this is what I started doing. I get sober. I get recovered. I start speaking in meetings. I start helping people. Life is good. I don't need to go to that meeting today. You know, I don't need to take that call from that sponsor today. Rachel says, Keith, you want to speak for me at Barker? No, I can't, Rachel, tonight. Not tonight. The game's on tonight. You know what I mean? The desperation's not there anymore. That willingness isn't there anymore. That gratefulness isn't there anymore. And I start reverting back to old self. So here's what I start doing. I start putting a little bit more in here. Let's go to the casino tonight. Right? Man, let's go to the strip club. Have some Sprites. Take the edge off. Right? I'm 11 years sober. She's hot, but she doesn't have a sponsor. Let me help her out. You know? Let me call my boss tomorrow because I don't feel like coming in, but I'm sick. I'm lying. So I went from this to clear, but back to this. You know what I mean? And what that is, and again, it's not AA approved, so don't call New York on me or anything like that. But what that is that's me mixing something old with something new, trying to get something new. And I see it time and time again, you know? I've been taught, the longer I'm sober, the more narrow this road gets. It just does. And what I'm promised is a daily reprieve from this thing, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, right? I've heard a lot of speakers in my time around, and you know, we got the Peters and the Stevie B's and the Russells, and they're all, you know, just God-fearing men of this program. So if I got up here and started preaching to you guys about the Bible, and, started preaching to you about our thousands and our fathers and stuff, that would be inauthentic, right? For me, 6 and 7 is like the nuts and bolts of this program. Because I've been a certain way for 35 years, right? I come in here hardwired to certain things, certain ideas, certain attitudes. Like, I am a certain way for 35 years. And it's not going to come out just because I do these steps. Like, I got to practice these things in all my affairs. So what does that look like? How do I show up with 6 and 7? Because it's easy for me to sit up here and read this stuff to you, but how do I incorporate 6 and 7 in my life? What does that look like? Well, in the book, it talks on page 86, 87, even though it's in step 11, it's really, you know, for me, a way to incorporate this in 6 and 7. Like in the morning when I get up, right? So I did my 4-step inventory. I did my 5th step with my sponsor. We got the character defects. Again, when you do your 4-step inventory, I said it a couple weeks ago, don't burn it. Don't put it in a bottle and put it out in the ocean. Don't do none of that, because that's going to be the blueprint for the rest of the work. So I got this blueprint, right? And I see who I don't want to be. But how do I not be that person? Because I've been that person for 35 years. And I was taught preparation. And what does that look like? Well, before I got sober, you know, I would obviously party till 2 in the morning. That's when the bars close up in New York. I'd have to get up at 6 because I got to be to work at 7. So I got 4 hours of sleep. But I don't want to get up at 6 so I can get 30 more minutes of sleep in. So I'm going to hit that snooze button until 6:30. Now, I'm not going to take a shower. I just got to wash up a little bit. So there's no preparation in the morning. You know what I mean? It's just going. And so I'm a little hungover and all that stuff. But today, preparation looks like this. I got to be working at 7. So I get up at 5. right? Because I go to bed earlier because I'm responsible today. So I get up at 5, and when I get up in the morning, I might just, you know, turn on SportsCenter or turn on Channel 7 News, because that's horrible if you're doing that. Don't do that. Channel 7 News is just muckety-muck. But I'm sitting out there on my patio with me and God, right? And for me, it's again, I don't know. I say simple prayers. It's not nothing elaborate. I just, you know, thank you, God, for waking me this morning. Tell me to stay sober. Help me help another alcoholic. Let me do your will. Amen. And I just sit there. But now here comes the preparation. So I'm thinking back to my four-step inventory, right? And I'm thinking about who people got when I showed up on the scene for 35 years. Who are they going to get today? Right? By that is what I mean is this. Like, I've had the same job for the last 10 years. That wasn't a possibility before I got sober. So I know who I'm going to see as far as my coworkers, right? I know who my customers normally are because they're regulars. And then you got your incidental contacts. Who are these people going to get when I show up on the scene, right? It's called constructive imagination. Because I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the angry person. I don't want to be the lying person. I don't want to cheat a customer. You know what I mean? Whatever. I don't want to be none of those things. So that's my preparation in the morning. Now, that's not to say that just because I'm prepared, I go to work and everything is rosy. And again, I'm rendered white as snow. I'm not. I'm a real lunatic at work. So these customers come in and I get agitated or whatever, and I get whatever I do, that's not my vision of that morning, right? In the past, I would lash out. I would take it out on my coworkers. I would go drink it off because I had a bad day. But now here's what we do. And we'll talk about this later in the 10-step inventory. But the book tells me I can pause. Like, I have a whole new constitution. I have a whole new way of dealing with life. Because, again, it's not about drinking and drugging. It's about how am I showing up today. So I get agitated at 7:30. I'm not going to wait till the nighttime to take care of that resentment because that's crazy. If you guys are doing that, don't do that. Give it a sponsor, but that's not how you do it. So I do a spot check inventory. And usually, when I'm agitated, it's something wrong with me. Now, when I heard Russell say that, I was like, he's out of his mind. Like, what are you talking about? That's called the spiritual action. If I'm agitated, there's something wrong with me. If you piss me off, there's something wrong with me. And I get to see that, right? And I go out in the back and I handle it. I do a spot check inventory. I take care of business. And I come back in and I start my day over. It would be called a recommitting, right? Even if my day goes awkward or to the wayside, I can recommit. Now, I didn't do that before I got here. Before I got here, I was a tornado running through the lives of my family, my fellows, and everything. This six and seven step, again, every day, I'm doing 6 and 7. Every day. Because, again, I'm not rendered white as snow. I said this at a meeting at the 101 Club one day, and the guy came up to me afterwards, like, you know, I had said, yes, I'm sober 10 years or whatever. I said, but I'm still a broken man, right? And this genius comes up to me after the meeting and says, you should never say you're a broken man because you're sober. And I'm like, listen, man, you're missing the context of what I'm saying. I'm a broken man still because I still have stuff to work on. I still have character defects. I still, you know what I mean? They're not as glaring as they were before. Now they're the small, subtle ones. You know, the small, subtle ones are one that usually take a lot of people out of this thing, you know? It's not the one, I'm not robbing, stealing, lying, but am I going out lusting, you know what I mean? Am I telling little white lies? Am I cutting corners here and there? Whatever. Until the day I die, I'm going to be doing 6 and 7. Until the day I die, I will be doing 6 and 7. I don't graduate from this thing, but again, I'm setting it, and on page 77, it says this, even though it's in step 8. It says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. That wasn't my truth when I got here. It was all about me and what could I get out of life. You know what I mean? Nothing about God, nothing about you. If I was doing something nice for you, it was a payoff for me doing that. You know what I mean? Especially with my family. Again, 6 and 7 is preparing me for what's coming next. 8 and 9, right? And 8 and 9, I'm making amends. And amends is not I'm sorry. Because I've said I'm sorry for 35 years. I'm sorry meant to my parents or whoever I'm saying I'm sorry to is I'm setting you up to do it again. Just watch. But these amends, you know, good sponsorship, it's important that when I go do this stuff, that they're gonna get somebody completely different than they've ever got before. And I'm not doing the amends to impress anybody. I'm doing this to clean off my side of the street so the past can't hurt me. I told you guys a couple weeks ago that here I'm in the program 4 years. I'm 4 years sober. I'm living in South Florida. I got an arrest warrant for in Georgia. And here I am speaking at meetings and sponsoring guys. But Keith, why aren't you driving? And I'm just making up all kinds of lies. Like, the past is really, this is me, 4 years in the deal. Not as glaring as it was when I first got here, but that's me. Like, I'm living a lie. I'm not coming clean. Four years in the deal, and this angel in my life said, it's time to go back to Georgia. And I went back and I took care of business. But I went back a new person. Like, the new person that went back was somebody who turned himself in, right? Who had his own money saved up, who didn't call mommy to pay the $2,000 fine, none of that, right? I come back here, like 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I had a serious ailment where I almost died. I had this thing called a blood anemia or whatever, anemic, I forgot how you say it, but they found three blood bleeding ulcers in my system. And we talk about this thing called legacy in my home group. So I'm in this hospital, right? I'm down in Imperial Point. And I'm on like the third or fourth floor. Well, the first night I got there, some friends came and they prayed over me or whatever. Cookie was one of them. So I go up in this hotel room, and I'm in this hospital bedroom. And the reason I'm saying this is because the person that was in that hospital bedroom is not the person who came in here today. The person who came in here 11 years ago wouldn't have had one visitor come to the hospital. Wouldn't have had one person known I was in the hospital. During this time, you know, I'm in the deal. I'm doing the deal. I got real relationships today. You know, I got authentic, intimate relationships. When I say the word intimate, for you new guys, it doesn't mean sexual. It means heart to heart. I got heart to heart relationships with women today where it's not sexual at all. That wasn't me when I got here. If you were a woman and I called you a friend, we had really been friends, you know what I'm saying? But there was a payoff where I was saying I was your friend. Because I wanted something from you. You know, I knew what that was. But that's not it today. So I'm in this hospital room, and I must have had like 300 visitors come to that hospital room. I say that to say that I had been reborn. I had built up these relationships and these things. I had built up this track of life, so to speak, this new walk of life that I'm living today, where people genuinely cared about my well-being. And they were coming to this hospital, I mean, back to 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 back. The nurses got sick of it. They just pointed to the back room when the second day I was in there. If you're new and you're sitting in here, and this is a question, like, it's always me looking inside and asking myself things, like things I would have never asked myself before, such as, what do you want, right? What do you want out of this thing called recovery? What do you want out of this thing called life? Like, if you're here, or you're in here just to get out of a DUI, that's okay. But you might want to look at why you're here for that DUI. Are you here to get the wife back? Because I got news for you. She might not come back. She might not like you once she sees who you really are. You know what I mean? She might not come back. Are you here to learn how to drink? You know, that's fine if you're new. You know what I mean? I didn't know any better. I wanted to learn how to drink successfully. I wanted to learn how to not get a DUI when I got here. Ask yourself, who do you wish to become? What do you want your legacy to be? Because I know, you know, when I got here, none of those questions, I mean, I thought that was all crazy. What he was talking about. Like, what are you talking about? Legacy. I'm not a Rockefeller or a Gates. I don't have a legacy. Not true. I know today that the life I have today it's not by my anything I did. I mean, I did the work of, yes, I showed up and participated in my recovery. But I take no credit for what I have today. Meaning, not the outside stuff. Because when I got here, I had nothing. I'm talking about the inside stuff. I'm talking about relationships with people, my boys and people. I'm talking about the love of my family again. You know what I mean? Like, for 7 years, this is how selfish and self-centered I was. I'm in Florida. Mom doesn't know where I am for 7 years. I'm hurting nobody but myself. That was my thought process. Like, I'm not hurting anybody but myself. And I aged that woman 20 years. But not so today. You know what I mean? Today she's proud of her son. You know, I've been going through some things lately, but that's, I stayed sober through it. You know what I mean? I didn't have to go out over it. What this program has done for me, and I'm going to talk about this going forward, you know, I've been able to live two lifetimes in one life. Think about that statement. Two lifetimes in one life, all because of my surrender, right? On a daily basis, I'm surrendering to this thing, wholeheartedly. I got it in my book written down, and I don't know if it was from the first big book seminar I went to, but it says, successful living comes from daily dying, meaning my ego. Six and seven does that. On a daily basis, six and seven does that. I don't know about you, but there's too many people dying on our watch. Too many people. Not just relapsing, that's just a part of this game, but they're dying. There's people dying on our watch. And so, yes, I'm very passionate about this thing. And I told you last week how I went to Philly and I heard that speaker with years talking about suicide and he was bragging. I mean, he was reveling in it. That's not so available to us, you know. We're doing a disservice to the newcomer by not giving them the truth. You know what I mean? You know, I had people in my corner that didn't care about my feelings, didn't care anything about that. They wanted me to get sober. They wanted me, and sober, there's a difference between sober and abstinence. Or undrunk. You know what I mean? There's a difference between being 30 years sober, walking around like I hit in the face with a dead fish. You know what I mean? If I gotta look like that when I'm 30 years sober, I'm drinking. It's not about that. You know, I can be a perfect piece of knees today because I have a God of my understanding. And all I had to do was some simple things, right? The book talks about there's a price that had to be paid. I'm not gonna get this thing by just coming in here and hanging out by going to 90 and 90. I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to get it by staying abstinent. I must participate. I must do some work. The amends, I got to do that stuff. The giving back, sponsoring guys, I got to do that stuff. The lesson I've learned in the last couple weeks is this. Like, no matter how big I think I am, and I don't think I'm big at all, but no matter how on I think I am with this thing, all I have is today. You know what I mean? All I have is this moment right now. The last 10 years, good, whatever. But the minute I start taking this thing for granted, the minute I start taking back over, the minute I start being a pilot of my own vessel, I'm a dead man walking. I got evidence of that. I got evidence to say that when Keith starts doing this and patting himself on the back, I'm a dead man walking. I got to be accountable to God every day. That's just for me. You know what I mean? I know if you're a newcomer, you hear me say that, you're like, this guy's preaching to us or whatever. I'm not. It's all about God. It's all about finding God of your understanding. It's all about you building this relationship with God. So the day is going to come, and my book tells me this, the day is going to come when the only thing standing between me and a drink or a drug is the God of my understanding. What am I going to do when that day comes? Am I going to be armed? Is my armor going to be on? It's only happened once so far where 10 months sober, I went back home to do my amends and I'm in the airport in Charlotte. And nobody knew I was, you know, from Florida knew where I was as far as at that exact moment. I'm waiting for my layover flight. And for me, that was a time to drink. Like, 2-hour layover, I can get drunk, get a nice little buzz on. And that obsession came back for a minute right there. Like, man, nobody knows. Take the edge off with a shot of tequila and a Budweiser. And I had a moment of clarity, and I prayed to my God, like, God, please remove this. And all I said was, God, please remove this obsession to drink right now. And he did. It was a calm, like a calm that I hadn't felt. I haven't had that since. You know, I haven't had the obsession to drink come over me. But the book tells me it's going to happen. And what's going to be my truth? Am I going to revert back to what I knew? The easier, softer way in? Or am I going to continue on this journey? So if you're new, it's here for all of us, right? I'm standing before you no better than you. No, I'm just a little bit more surrendered than some, but I'm no better than you. I'm no different than you. Life isn't a bowl of cherries. Life happens, you know. But I don't have to drink and drug over today. I don't have to be a victim today. I don't have to walk around with the poor me's and look for sympathy. Like, you know, I don't have to play that game. Like, let me tell you this story about me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to... Let me tell you about my day. And then just give you a story so I can get something out of you. No. I could be a perfectly easel, whatever's going on. And that wasn't my truth when I got here. This disease wants me dead. It does. It wants me dead, and I know it wants me dead. Because I've seen guys with 25 years, I've seen guys with 10 years go out. And I don't know the reason why it happened. Well, I do know the reason, but nobody ever has to pick up another white chip in this room tonight. Imagine that. You don't ever have to pick up a white chip. You don't ever have to go back. This could be your last treatment center, your last rehab. It can be the last one. The question you have to ask yourself is, how committed are you and what do you want? What do you want? I don't know. I'm a blessed man today. You know, I came into this program 11 years ago hating God. Hating. Didn't even know him, but was hating. The only time I talked to him was when I was in trouble. Somebody near and dear to me told me this, and I'll end with this. You know, yes, it's all about God. And yes, what am I doing on a daily basis to get to know my Creator? But I should be able to tell you people about the God of my understanding without saying a word. Without saying a word. Does the song match the dance? For you that don't know me, you wouldn't know that answer. But for those who do know me, they can tell you. I said it a couple weeks ago. I had two conversations when I came in here. There was the outer conversation, there was the inner conversation. They were this far apart. Now the conversation is more a little bit like that. Still got a lot of work to do to get it right here. With God's grace and mercy, I'll get there one day. But next week we'll talk about step 7. Thank you. Thank you.